in life for free. But you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money. That's what I want.
Well, one quick Stacks and Jacks. I've come out. Jeez. AV on the board 2 days in a row. Right eyed and bushy tailed again. Wouldn't you say that, AV?
Yes.
Not very loudly, but she said. SP Futures down seven.
Good morning.
NASDAQ Futures down 30. Dow Futures down 70. So we're down a little bit here, but not heavy. Got some major earnings coming out the rest of the week. We're going to have Apple. We got Google. We got Facebook. We got all kinds of stuff. We'll be trickling them out at you. This morning a little bit. We got McDonald's revenues down 30%, despite some progress there. But anyway, do we have Brendan?
Yes, I'm here, Chief.
How are you, bud? What's a good word?
Well, I'm very glad that we have a place in Michigan and not Wisconsin right now.
Why is that?
Pardon me?
Why is that?
Otherwise, I'd be in quarantine every time I come back to talk to you.
Yeah, I'm sure. I don't... What does that stupid sign on the expressway even mean?
I don't. Well, you're supposed to self quarantine if you've been in Wisconsin for a while, but it's really, I mean, there's no enforceability to the directive that you have to self quarantine when you come in from any of the states that are referred to in the order. But it is kind of strange that if you, like, our place is in Wisconsin and Michigan, and we're off in an old Boy Scout camp, completely hidden from the world. We don't interact with anybody, and yet, if it extends to Michigan, we could have to be quarantined 2 weeks at a time when we go back and forth.
So if you're visiting, say, relatives, and there's, 20 people in the house, or that's an exaggeration, say 10, you're supposed to, if we think you have it, you're supposed to pile in with them and give it to them, or what? I mean, what does it even mean by quarantine?
That's a good question. I don't know how that works, but if you live with somebody, how do you stay away from them?
The more this goes, I think the more, our knowledge of something, our way of thinking is getting worse and worse, Brendan. It's just me. I think there's a real danger there. And I talk to people, and the idea that, when you bring up stuff like, you really don't want to get in the habit of telling people what to do, like, all the time from government. And these are people that, for years probably would have agreed with me. And all of a sudden, interject a little fear in there. And everybody's, you have to tell people what to do. And I say, it's sort of like a gun ownership, Everybody, you should make sure guns don't get in the hand of the right people. Yet no person I've ever met says that they're one of the people that shouldn't have a gun. The bar always starts, like, right below them.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That wherever I am, that's the minimum requirement to have a gun or to have whatever it is.
And you say stuff, the other night I was having a discussion with a guy who's a retired attorney. That doesn't make him, anything, but he's a bright guy. And you say stuff like, even the mask issue. Now, of course, the guy's got one of those, I'm going to go rob a stagecoach mask that he hasn't washed in 3 months, right? And I say, masks, if you use them properly, I would think that they would probably help. I mean, in the one that I have, or I have several, but I mean, is one that you would wear in a dentist's office, not the dentist, but the nurse. And I said, you've never seen the lady walk out for the next patient with the same mask, right? He goes, well, yeah. I said, you've worn that thing, I'm going to say, 3 months. And if you're walking by people with COVID and everything, I said, by our buddy Carl, who's a little demonstrative on the subject, says that basically 90% of the masks out there now should be in a biohazard hole. Right? I mean, what are we, and the idea, I said, why can't we just give people information and expect them to use their common sense? But every single person, though, Brendan says, you can't count on anybody else to use their common sense. And I said, but once you start going down that road, nobody individually wants to be told what to do, but now it's okay to tell everybody else what to do. Now, that bar is tough to put below you, because you're going to be one of the people being told what to do. And I don't want to make light of the fact that this has knocked out a bunch of people in nursing homes. I don't want to get it. I mean, I don't. Yet, Brendan, there's only so much I can cry about five baseball players who feel fine. I mean, it's not like they got cancer, for God's sake. They're gonna be okay in a week. They're not even they're asymptomatic. That's why they don't care. I mean, at some point here. I had an adult beverage last night. Some guy gets back to work for one of the firms, and he's so happy to be back here. And he said, "Well, I was going to go to Indiana for my niece's birthday, but it turns out the family's all got COVID." And I said, his brother and his wife. I said, "Well, how'd they get it?" She says, "Well, she works in a clinic, and she probably brought it home from there." I mean, I would say at the end of the day here, I unequivocally can say this. And this is, again, not like I'm not, you know, Mr. Scientist or anything. When all said and done, we're going to find out that the hospitals were the biggest spreaders of this disease, by far. Because they have no idea. I mean, as our friend Carl says, a hospital designed for you to walk in with a heart attack or get carried in with a heart attack or a gunshot wound or have cancer, it's not designed for somebody to walk through all the waiting areas with smallpox until he finally gets to the person to talk to. It isn't, right? It's not designed for somebody to walk in with an infectious disease. And, you know, I don't know why they're not, but they're not. So I said to him, okay. He said, yeah, they all tested positive, his brother, his wife, and the two kids. Because they were going to go into a place in Michigan City, and somebody was doing the temperature checks, and one of the kids had a little fever. So he tested everybody, they all had it, right? He goes, they didn't even know it. I said, how they feel? He goes, they feel fine. They stay home for 10 days and go back to work. I mean, we don't want this thing here. We wish it wasn't here. We're worried about some people that it deals with the worst way, but for God's sake, Brennan, it's not like getting cancer. And we seem to have no, I mean, I was talking to somebody the other day. I said, you know, I said, it's getting better because they know how to treat people a lot better. The treatment is much better than it was in March or April. I don't see anybody can deny, oh man, people are still dying. I get that part. I said, but it's way less people. And in March, I was pretty afraid, and now I'm not really. I mean, I would still rather not get it, but I think I'll survive now. In March, I wasn't so sure. In fact, I thought I probably didn't have much of a chance of surviving away. But why can't we just give people the information, Brennan? I mean, if you listen to the news all day, they'll go from one place that's a hot spot to another. You can listen four stations and pin your ear to the TV, and you'll never find out how much the numbers have turned down in Arizona. Right, you'll never find out how much they've turned down in Illinois, all over the state. They've got a couple of hot spots that didn't have it before. You will never hear of any progress whatsoever. All you'll fear about is fear and hype. That's all you hear.
Well, I agree that the numbers are not being given in a way that makes it understandable how significant the illness is. I mean, they talk about the numbers going up, but of course, the longer you go in time, the more the numbers are going to go up, and the same thing with deaths. I do think that things like the infection rate are important, and what the recent trends are, both in infection rates and in death rates. Those are important information that are not being provided as much as I would like to see. But, you know, it's interesting when you're talking about the dictation of the mayors and the governors around the country. This all reminds me of an argument either in favor of or against lawyers, whichever your tendency happens to be. But a written contract really should not ever see the light of day. If the parties agree on what they're going to do, you know, you sign a contract on the outside saying, I'm going to do this, you're going to do that, and we have an agreement. And then you put the contract away in the drawer. The only time that contract has to come out is if you or I decide that the other person is not doing their contract or we want to stop doing what we're doing. And it's the same thing with the direction for dealing with COVID, that if we just said, you know, let's just practice social distancing. If you're off, as a courtesy, wear a mask so that you're not putting other people at risk. But instead, we've gotten to this point of hyper-politicization of it, where people are threatening each other with guns because they're either wearing or not wearing a mask. It's ridiculous.
Brendan, you got to move somewhere. You're going in and out. You got to move to a better spot.
Really? Okay. I'm sitting right in my living room here. So I'm sorry. Is that any better?
A little better, yes.
All right. Strange, because this is the same spot I've sat in before, but anyway.
Well, it's probably sunspots.
All right. Let me try something else. Okay. But, you know, the other part of this is now that we're on stocks and jocks, we have some baseball to talk about.
Yeah, what do you think? I mean, isn't that why they put, give everybody a 60-man roster, so if you had five or six people tested positive, you just send them home for 2 weeks and bring somebody else in? Isn't that the idea?
That's one of the ideas, yeah, that they have the 30-man roster for the first 2 weeks. But this is a very interesting experience because, you know, what happens if the five guys that you lose, say the Cubs, for example, what if the five guys that you lose because of COVID are Anthony Rizzo, Chris Bryant, Javi Baez, and any of the two starting pitchers? How is that going to affect the team even if they're home for 10 days or 2 weeks? 2 weeks would be at least two turns through the rotation for a starting pitcher.
Well, I mean, but it's...
Whereas if you have another team that's there, they lose their number 25 through 29 guys on the bench.
Wasn't that all part of the... You know, that was all part of it. Well, what if your first guys get hit or hurt, or are your best guys?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's, as they used to say, the rub of the brush, right?
Well, it is, but there's a greater likelihood with the testing right now that you're going to have more people infected. I mean, you just pointed out a few minutes ago how the testing works and how likely it is that some of the people who are going to get infected will just spread through a clubhouse. Look what happened with the Marlins. They lost 11 players. So they went from a 30-man roster to 11 right now. I don't know how many they can pull up from their taxi squad or whatever they're calling it right now. But that's a pretty significant hit when you've got 11 of the guys who made the team get infected and are going to be out for a while.
It's an opportunity to excel for the other guys.
Yeah, thank you, Wally Pipp and Lou Gehrig.
Yes. Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't understand why, in one way, Brennan, I mean, why wouldn't, you know, it's almost 3 weeks ago when everybody's practicing at Wrigley Field. You almost been better off if everybody got it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Although they wouldn't be in the condition, that they wouldn't go through their conditioning drills. But, you know, you look at some of the ball players like Juan Moncada for the White Sox. He came back and played pretty well when he came back after having COVID. But you're right. If everybody had the antibodies and had some type of immunity, that would be better. So you may want to think that you wanted to go through your clubhouse.
Well, I mean, it is obviously very contagious. I mean, we knew that, you know, the first day it showed up, and then we started doing any studies on it. I mean, that part's there. But, I mean, I think I guess what I'm saying, Brent, I just can't we're talking about asymptomatic 25-year-olds. So they got to stay home a week. I mean, out of all the problems that you and I have, you know, it's not like we had some deathly flu, like, you know, we had a couple times on the trading floor or something. I mean, I sure hope they don't go home to where somebody's older. I was reading this thing last week. I'm becoming the fulcrum where we sent me all this stuff. So somebody hooks me onto this coronavirus thing where all these guys are sending, like, all the medical stuff, which protein they're trying to get on the thing and the whole bit. I mean, I don't understand any of it, to be honest with you, so it's not like I'm an expert on this stuff. But I did read one where they were somebody has charted it by age, Brennan, and they would say that if you're under five, a bad flu is like 7 to 8 times worse than the COVID. Like from 5 to 12, a flu is like 2 or 3 times as bad. Start getting older, they're about the same. Maybe a flu is a little worse. By the time you're like 80, the COVID's like 30 times worse than a flu.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing the difference in how it affects you as you get older. It's pretty scary, actually.
Well, yeah, for any respiratory disease, that makes sense because the longer, even if you're otherwise healthy, because the longer you've been around, the more crap you've been inhaling over the course of your life. I mean, you and I, given our age, have inhaled a lot more crap from the air after 60-some years than somebody who's been alive for 20. So there's more stuff in our system already to affect our lungs and our lung capacity more than somebody who's 20 or 25 years old. So I think that's a big part of it.
Well, I hope it's not too big of a part because I'm back to the health club today. Thing has finally opened up, so I'm back in. So hopefully I haven't lost too much. But you do lose, though. There's no doubt when you're not doing stuff. I my concerns have have gone towards, Brendan. I don't, I mean, I'm serious about it. I know I talk about it every day, and everybody else is serious too, I think, but someday, somewhere, if the treatments get better and better, which I think they continue to be, to where, unless people that are totally compromised, you're going to go with something anyway, right? I know it's harsh to say, but it's the truth. I mean, someplace, somewhere, somebody's just going to have to declare, we're going back to work. And I'm not, like I said many times, I don't know if it's today. It probably isn't. But the idea now that, you know, Google doesn't want people coming back to work till the middle of, what?
July of next year.
Yeah, July of next year. Well, then, that's fine. You know, that's fine for Google. They can do what they want. I mean, they're a monopolist, which maybe they shouldn't be able to do what they want. But I don't want some teacher telling me that they need to get paid for another year without doing anything. Or somebody in the Secretary of State's office, or my alderwoman, you know. Other people are working, and they're getting pretty pissed off about the people who aren't. Because there are people every day taking risks. I mean, there's the people who are driving the bus, they're still going to work. People who are delivering the mail, they're going to work. And the idea that they should work half a day to pay somebody who's sitting at home, hey, if it's a risk, we all need to take it. Or nobody needs to take it, one or the other, Brendan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if you agree with that or not, but I mean, at some point, I mean, right? It's a cold. It's a flu. It's worse. Everybody who's gets on TV, and it just bothers a living bleep out of me, calling for another complete shutdown. They can't wait to get their front door and get their chow delivered or their Amazon. Who do they think is doing that? Right?
No, I agree. It's in Congress, and it's inconsistent in the approach, because we always have so-called essential workers, which I think is interesting when you think about, if the worker is so essential, why are they making minimum wage to begin with?
Yeah. Well, plus, I don't think it's all essential for you to get crap delivered to your front door.
Now, wait a minute. If you're talking about me getting it, it is essential. Just like you.
I understand, you know.
You get it. It is essential, isn't it?
I mean,
it's that other guy. It's like you were talking about before. You know, where is the bar? The bar about the person who should have the right to the gun.
Yeah.
It starts with me, and anybody below me doesn't get it. Same
right.
thing with my stuff from Amazon. If I'm getting it, of course it's essential.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, sometimes when I have the luxury, you know, by having a bunch of different guests on, as you know, everyone is challenging intellectually. You know, so I have the luxury once in a while, or just backing up and saying, what am I really saying? Am I making any sense? Or, I mean, am I right or am I wrong in this one? Or should I just let this one alone? Or I back up and I just see sort of the damage that's happening to people. And I almost want to go back and read 1984 again, because every time I bump into somebody who literally has not been out of the house in 3 or 4 months, Brendan, they're sitting there watching the boob tube, whatever station, all day long, and this is their life. They quote these statistics. I mean, I sent out. I dug on Wikipedia yesterday, and I dug out the quote in Mein Kampf for the Big Lie. Brent, I can go into places, and somebody will be. I'll see somebody for the first time in 3 months, or go over to somebody's house, and they'll say it's the first time I've been out, and they'll argue about the numbers, and they'll say, man, I can't believe we haven't handled this as well as China. What are you talking about? China gave it to the rest of the world, and they probably have had 2 million deaths over there. What are you talking about? And they go, well, the number is 85,000 cases. I said, why would you ever believe that? And I said, well, that's what I hear every day. And you know what, Brendan, they do. They hear it every day. Somebody will say the number of cases in China is 85,000. People doing any investigative reporting in any of these stations? They just pick up one number and they run with it? Or is somebody behind it that we're somehow or another we have to? I started Alan Blinder last week, who I thought was useless as an SEC guy, but was on talking about the COVID and how he was like, you know, self beating himself about the head. And he's like, well, you know, I can't believe every other country did it way better than we did it. Every other country is not America. For God's sake, how far is it from Phoenix to New York? It's another country. Just because you've reached herd immunity in New York doesn't mean you reached it in Atlanta. Doesn't mean you reached it in Phoenix, right? Everybody's going to have to go through with this particular disease. If it pops up in an area, you're probably going to have to go through the same thing as everybody else did, right? Until we find, thank God, we have treatment options now. Not 100%, but way better than they were. And thank God there's some T-cell immunity that not everybody's getting it because the numbers. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, to a large extent, we've lucked out on this.
It's interesting you mentioned that, go back and reread 1984, because over the last couple of months, I ordered and I reread both Animal Farm and 1984.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was very interesting to me to
but people,
parallels.
But tell me if you've, like I said, it's part of Michigan City, I've mentioned a few times. The people there.
Michigan City's in Indiana.
That wasn't Michigan City, it was in Ogden Dunes, which is, of course, in Indiana as well. And they, God, it felt like I was talking to people who just had a lobotomy. I mean, they literally, all they did was quote me to stuff that I see on the news all day long. It was, mm-hmm. And these are bright people, the professors, engineers. Of course, they weren't professing, the school was closed. They weren't engineering because the plant was closed. I mean, you can't. Now, I mean, it's almost like if there was a somebody, if there was a deep state, it's almost like they're using this as a massive experiment just to see how much they can brainwash people. And I think they're real happy with the results.
Mm-hmm.
Did you?
I think part of the damage going on right now is that the other side of the equation, too, is denying that it even exists, that it's even a problem, and denying what you said a while ago. And I think that's throwing a lot of misinformation into the equation that also spawns fear. When you have some of the people saying it's going to go away in 10 days or 15 days, or we've got 15 people, it's not a problem. That, and then you see numbers of people dying and getting sick. That also creates more panic.
Well, Brennan, we have, by any sort of, I think, reasonably intelligent extrication of these numbers,
mm-hmm.
we have or will shortly have 40 to 50 to 60 million people that have had it and are over it. What do we do with them? We continue to make them stay in, wear masks, can't go anywhere?
No, that's a really big question and concern is if they have the antibodies, why shouldn't they be allowed or even required to go back to work? And, you know, that's, again, where some of the science comes in, is how immune are they? Does the immunity last for 3 days? Does it last forever? Does it last someplace in between? Because I agree with you that if somebody is immune, if this was like measles, that you get it, you're over it, and you're immune, then for all those people who have recovered, go back to work, open things up, that'd be fine.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about, I just got a, one of my, I hesitate to use the term cub reporters, my cub reporters, people that help out with information for the show. 11 a.m. on Monday, Fort Sheridan parking lot of Metro, how many cars?
What, 10?
One. Highland Park, how many?
Two.
12. Ravinia, one, and Glencoe, two. If we don't do some stuff pretty soon here, Brennan, I don't know how we ever turn it back on.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what you do with the amount of rent not being paid and with the amount of, and then you have buffoons coming on and saying, oh, don't worry, all these banks are fine. Somebody's got all these loans, Brennan.
Yeah.
I don't see how anybody, knowing what I know about the economy, which is, maybe a little bit, but in terms of the whole, it's minuscule because nobody can know much about anything. All I know, Brendan, is all this stuff works together. You can't pull out, one piece of a football team and not have the rest of the team have a problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see how everybody can just say that this thing is all salved over as long as people keep printing money and throwing money in people's mailbox. Somehow, some way, you can't have these banks go down, but we'll be okay. Well, we can't have, this section of downtown, but we'll be okay. I mean, what are we going to do?
It's not only the banks. It's not only the bank situation here, but there's going to be an entire recalibration of things like office space. I mean, think about how many big office buildings have been constructed in the last 10 years since the last financial crisis. And what's going to happen with all the spaces as people reconfigure their work environment, how many people will be able to work from home on a regular basis, so you don't need the corner office anymore, and it's not something you're going to aspire to. you're going to have more of a maybe a part-time rental office for people who are going to be in the office once every 2 weeks, not because they're traveling around the country doing their job as a salesman or a consultant or something, but because they're able to remotely work from Bali or from Key West. And it's going to change the whole dynamics of the office industry for rent, for consolidation. But I also think it's going to change the dynamics of how people work together. A big part of why people work in offices is the socialization and the exchange of ideas, which I don't think are as easily done when you're working from home and working remotely.
I'm going
to
say
it's hard to stop at the coffee machine and chat about the game last night or chat about the new idea from the CEO if you're 100 miles away from each other trying to connect on a Zoom call.
Every piece of our bureaucracy, Chicago, Illinois, whatever you name it, everybody I've tried to contact or do anything is allegedly working from home. It's been horse bleep. Anybody thinks that they're effective from there is out of their mind.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are people that are. I mean, I'm sure an attorney probably could work from home, but not if he's got four kids crawling around him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yep.
So Audrey can work from home because she has her own. She has her own real estate place, and she has a home. She lives by herself, and she's got a huge place with an office. Okay, so mm-hmm. For her to have to go somewhere else to another desk is a little bit ridiculous. But how many people are like that? If she had eight people mm-hmm. working for her, I don't know if she'd want them hanging in her living room, right?
Right. No, that's the problem. It's going to reconfigure the entire structure of the workplace going forward. It already has, but it will continue, and I think exacerbate problems that we haven't even anticipated yet as far as the social dynamic and the work efficiency.
All right, Brendan, we got a dash, buddy. SP Futures down 14.50 now. NASDAQ Futures down 65. We're leaking a little bit. Be right back, Mr. Joel Unkannon.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, Nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. She's AV on the board 2 days in a row. 2 days in a row, getting up at a good hour. It's good training for you, don't you think, AV?
Might be good. Let's see if I'll survive till the end of the day.
Yeah, see how you survive today at school and everything. S&P futures down 16 and a quarter now. NASDAQ futures down 67. Dow futures down 112. Two earnings plays that are down. When I say earnings plays, I did one of them. McDonald's down 475, trading 196.50, and 3M. Down 474, trade 158.50. And I think I did a spread at the 160 number, which if I did, I think I might have a dinger there. We'll see. A lot can happen between now and the opening, of course, and it takes a while for options to adjust, so you never know on these things. AV, you put in the win column when the trade is done, and it's not done till it's done, as they say. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 67.5%, the FTSE up 64 cents. We'll call that flat. Back around down 39, that's 0.8%. So FTSE is hanging in there, the rest of them are not. Nikkei down 58.2%, Shanghai up 22.7%, Hang Seng up 169.7%. Bonds, 0.60, actually up from the 0.58 yesterday. Bund minus 0.49, and Japan positive 0.02, so still not very much movement there. Oil down 8 cents, 41.52, Brent up 15 cents, 43.56, big quiet day in the oil market. Natural gas up 3 cents, 176. RBOB right where it's been, 126. Gold, wow, down $5. Well, that's unusual. Silver down 72 cents. That's been a huge run in there. Copper down a penny. What do you have for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
Good morning, friends. Hope you're all doing great. It's 86 degrees, beautiful, sunny morning. But a few showers and thunderstorms are possible this afternoon and evening. Mainly in north side, so expect areas to remain dry. And high, and the weather should be the high in the mid-80s. 90 degrees in Phoenix, there's excessive heat warning, so if you're from Phoenix, be careful. Don't forget to use sunscreen. UV index is at extreme level. And no major delays in traffic still, but we have one rollover accident, a crash on the ramp from 79th to the outbound Dan Ryan near Chatham neighborhood. Also, Dan Ryan inbound at 63rd, the left express lane is blocked following a crash. Delay start before the Chicago Skyway. We have Joel with us.
Joel, you with us, bud?
I am. Good morning, Chief. How you doing on this Tuesday morning?
I'm doing good. I think of you now probably four times a day.
We go to the post office?
No. When people say, I'll say, boy, to Chicago, look at downtown, look at the crime, and nobody down here. And somebody inevitably says, we're turning into Detroit, and I immediately think of you.
Oh, well, Chief, I mean, once again, you're just showering me with comments and accolades. So, you know, I really can't tell you how the crime has been in Detroit because I haven't been there since the end of February. You know, certainly the crime in New York City, Chicago, really doesn't matter. In fact, it's a very bullish indicator for the market. The more violence, the more racial unrest, and the more people that get the virus is better, actually better for the markets.
Yeah, well, because you got to put more money into the system and call it fiscal stimulus when, in fact, they're just printing money and sending it to people.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
If the economy's doing so great and everything's so good, why do we even need any fiscal stimulus?
Because the economy's doing good on, quote, a nominal level because they're paying people this money, and the day it stops, it's like the, let me ask you, how much bitching do you think Moses got the day the manna stopped?
It probably started and hasn't stopped.
Yeah. So now we went from, I'm just looking at this Republican plan this morning. I don't know if you looked at it. I'm not criticizing. I'm just reading it. Sometimes, Joe, I don't know if you took a bus to school, but they used to try and sell ads on the bus, right? And of course they didn't sell all of them. And when they didn't, they would always put something on there that, well, one of the posters was, "When the truth hurts, it should." You know, which I always thought was a pretty good line. So I'm just going to read this coronavirus. Now, mind you, the $600 weekly enhancement that we've had along the way here basically puts somebody, unless you're talking about unemployment in like Georgia or someplace, put most people at, what, 23 and a quarter was the number, Joel? Even
yep.
In most jobs, when I say most jobs, and, you know, I'm saying this is just the truth. The median wage in this country is $36,000. And it divided by how many hours are in the year? 2,080 or something? Something like that. So if you divide that by that, you're basically talking $15 an hour, right? $15.50. And a lot of jobs are below that. I mean, there's a lot of jobs in 11, 12, 13 range. So I'm going to say more than 50% of the economy were making more at home than they were making at their job with this $600 stimulus check. Not saying that's bad or anything. I'm just telling you what it is. Okay. Now they're going to say that you're going to restrict that to 70% of what your normal pay would have been. Now, of course, I don't trust these not individual, collective morons. How much work is that, Joel, to know that I make $12 an hour, so they're going to pay me what's 70% of 12, $8.40, but you make 10, so you're going to get 7. How are they possibly going to work that out? So in the meantime, they're going to say, look, we're just going to give people 200, not 6, as we figure out how to determine what 70% of what the person would normally make. Talk about an exercise in futility. Just give everybody the 200 or 300. Who's going to go through this calculation? How many idiots do we have to hire for this? To whether the guy making $10 an hour should get an unemployment check of $70 or $84. You know, what is the point of that? Anyway, so we're going to get another $1,200 stimulus check plus $500 payments for dependents of any age. Can I go out and get a dog and put the dog's name in there if I name the dog like Joe or something? And then not a dog name?
I'm still looking in my mailbox. I haven't gotten anything yet.
Well, no, you're not, this is going to be, won't be for a while. But, you know, you're one of these guys that makes over $400,000 a year, so.
Yeah.
So you're not going to, you don't get this thing.
No. Chief, you know, it's a plan, and it's a plan because, you know, you have an election year, and they're going to fight, and I'm really surprised that, you know, the market was up yesterday in anticipation of it coming through, and I guess the market is a little bit disappointed, got the futures trading down, but you said you got down and dirty in Triple M. I haven't heard you mention many trades lately. I see it trading down 471. What did you do in it?
I just did the calendar. I did this the 160 this week, next week. I thought it would go down a little bit.
You sold the call spread?
No, I bought next week, sold this week. It's a kind of a volatility play. Because what happens? But I used to reel a lot of these, Joel. But now lately, the volatility is high. I mean, how's this, Doug? Please do not. Nobody take this as a. I take a look at what the straddle's selling for.
Yeah.
And I used to have better equipment, and I don't know if anybody. I'm not talking about my equipment. Well, I used to have better than that too, I guess. But the.
Too much information.
I used to have a machine called a. The hell was the name of the thing? I'll remember it, but I had it for years and years and years. And I used
Voltron?
To. No, it was a Schwartzatron. The guys from New York. I'll remember it. But you used to be able to model stuff. Even now, your best machines, even the stuff you get from IB and all these other people that have the really good valuation and stuff on there, what none of them allows you to do is to. This system I used to have and couldn't, you know, when it left, I was just totally pissed off. You could put your live screen up there, which would have your implied volatilities and all the other stuff, the markets. You could go to another page, which frees that page with all those prices and the stock price. If the stock's trading 50, it would freeze at 50. Okay? So as it's moving around, you didn't have all the stuff changing in front of your face. You could move the dates, you could move the dividend, you could move the interest rate, you could move all the stuff in your models and see what happened. So what I would used to do, and this is probably too long of a story here, but if you look at a straddle, say the straddle, if the stock's trading 50 is $5, okay, I would, the market's telling you, all right, that the over-under on this movement on earnings day is 5 hours, right? And usually they're pretty good. What I would do is I would look at the calendar spread, and if I'm paying, say, 30 cents for it or 20 cents, I would move the stock $5, and I would drop the volatility in the front month down to where it's going to be after the earnings. And if I could get the spread to test out better than the straddle, I would do it. So I would, in other words, I would get a position that was better than what
the
market...
Than
the straddle. If I could get the... In other words, if the time spread was 20 cents... And at that level, it would test $7, not $5. Then I'd do it. Understand what I'm saying?
Yep, I got it. Thanks, Chief. I got a hot.
All right, you
got to
go take care of yourself, bud. Well, we'll talk more sports next week, buddy.
Oh, we ain't talking any sports, Chief.
I know it's a big. Well, you're going to force the Irish to join the ACC. What the hell?
Yeah, I hope that comes. That becomes a question. I hope that becomes relevant.
Yep. All right, buddy. Take care. We have Kenny. Kenny, how are you, buddy? I'm getting guys
good,
on the fly
sir,
here. AV's got, we're just, this is like a relay race. The baton has just got passed to Kenny. Could you imagine you and I in a relay race? I'm trying to pick.
What's going on?
I don't know. I just think with the two of us, it would have to be a sandwich so he didn't drop it, not a baton. just saying, you know. or a bottle of wine, one of the two. I don't know. So, so how are you, bud? How's the world treating you?
You know, the world is good. I mean, you know, I'm okay. I think it's I'm living a life down in Florida that is very different from what, you know, it appears to be on the television. But we did get good news yesterday that cases in Arizona and California and Florida are actually in decline. So that's good. Just because I'm tired of watching it on TV and having people tell me the life I'm living in Florida because it's very different than what it appears. But away from that, you know, we're chugging through earnings season. This week is, as you know, is going to be a big week. Today's going to be a big day. We got 57 plus names going to report today. Thursday will be, I think, the bigger day. And then throw the Fed in between tomorrow, and that's going to create lots of excitement and potential volatility in the days ahead for the rest of this week.
What the numbers going down in those states, by the way, I don't know if you remember, but you and I both predicted by this Tuesday, based on the models that were, you know, that we've been looking at, they would both be turning down. Now,
And they are.
Just when you get to a certain percentage of people that have tested positive, it turns down in every state. So why is it, Kenny, that you and I and an awful lot of other people have noticed this now for 2 months, and yet it can't get in the news anywhere? There can be nothing positive whatsoever in the news about this pandemic.
Because it doesn't tell the story, right? It doesn't tell the story that the left wants it to tell. And that's, I think, what the frustrating part about it is, because, you know, I have family that lives up in Massachusetts, and they're calling me every day, concerned. I said, what are you so concerned about? It is not. I live in Palm Beach County, Dade County. I work in Dade County, so I'm in the middle of what they say is this crisis. I go, I got to be honest with you. It is not what it appears at all. People are out. People are shopping. People are going to lunch. People are going to dinner. Are they social distancing? Yes. Are they wearing masks? Yes. Everyone's respectful of that, but life hasn't come to a standstill, and nor are there, you know, nor are there bodies on the street the way that the media might make it sound. It's not like that at all. But you know, that doesn't really sell, right? That they want to create, they want to continue to create that kind of nervousness and angst. For what reason, I'm not really sure, but they do.
I'm gonna say, Kenny, you know, I, as you know, I get all kinds of stuff, especially from the right, complaining about the media all being from the left. I'm gonna say that if even on your old station or the station you're still on,
yep.
more the women than the guys. I mean, I don't know, it's probably a sexist shot, but last week they had a few guys on there talking about, well, you know, a lot of stuff is getting a lot better about this. You know, I mean, the treatment's a lot better, something.
Yep.
And immediately, especially the blonde lady who's on in the afternoon, Cindy, whoever her name is, you can't even make Sarah. A statement. You can't even make a statement like that before say, yeah, but look at the numbers of how many people are in the hospital. You can't, I mean, there's this constant, I think it has more to do with panic sells more.
Well, I agree with you. I think that's exactly right. You know, the good news doesn't really sell anything. It's the hysteria and the panic that's created. Look, Bill Gates, who, you know, as we all know, his foundation is working very, very diligently on the vaccines and on new therapies and all that stuff. He got on CNBC today and he goes, look, we're making great strides, not only therapies, but these vaccines. He fully expects to have a vaccine by late fall. He certainly expects to see extreme cases and deaths plummet. Based on the work that's happening. But, you know, that's not really what you see when you turn on the news.
No.
All you see is the other side, which is, you know, that they're all creating this hysteria. And it's frustrating on a number of levels. It's frustrating just because I'm tired of, it's anxiety. It just creates anxiety, which is going to create a whole nother set of issues for people in this country, right?
I don't see how
they become so anxious that they're afraid to do anything.
You've got people so afraid, Kenny. I mean, I bump into my significant other, Audrey, said, you know, I talked to my cousin. She has not been out of the house in 4 months.
Okay, that's not healthy.
No.
I have to tell you, that's not healthy.
And I said, when I was in Indiana last week, I already mentioned it 2 weeks ago, I probably bumped into a few people, lady at a birthday party, and like five of them there said his first time out of the house since March. And, yeah. And Kenny, they acted and sounded like it. So you gave him a brain surgery. It's pretty scary. But what? Look at this baseball. And I don't want anybody. You know me well enough. I don't want to see a rat that's sick, for God's sake, let alone a person.
Right.
And yet I look at this Major League Baseball. There's 10, 25-year-old guys got a disease and they're not even sick. How many tears can I shed? They're fine.
Well. Right, but you see, that's the frustrating part is because they're asymptomatic, so they appear to be fine, but the fear is that, you know, they're carrying it, and they're going to start to infect people that are not going to be fine.
I have no problem.
People with compromised immune systems. And I get all that. I mean, I do understand that.
But I guess it's at some point, they're going to go sit somewhere in a nice place for 10 days. They're going to go play ball again. This is not exactly right. Out of all the things going wrong in the world, this is not one of them. I'm more worried about the poor Muslims that are slave labor in China than I am about these guys.
Yeah, listen, and I don't mean it to sound like that, but it's just, if you look around, I'm not living what the media's portraying. I'm really not, and I'm supposedly living right in the center of it all, and it's not anything like what the media's portraying. And now listen, I'm not in hospitals, I don't know what the hospital count is, although I don't think the hospital count is nearly as bad as they make it sound. I just don't think it is. I don't think the hospital, there are not lines out the hospital. There aren't people, you know, waiting on the curbside for someone to come in and take them in by a wheelchair. It's just not. I drive by the Boca Regional Hospital every day. I look because I'm very curious to see. I don't see panic.
There was a gentleman on last night. But this is what, somehow, Kenny, and I don't know how you do it in a free society. Maybe you have better news media. Maybe you have you know, more selectivity, whatever you do. I'm not saying you should censor anything because that just makes things worse. I mean, you have every single doctor on there demanding more money for the hospital, for more protective equipment, for more than the histrionics is such that you'd swear that there was a smallpox epidemic and the place was, you're throwing bodies out the window. And yet some guy came out after, he goes, every single one of these areas got plenty of room in the hospitals. There's not any area that's jammed up with hospitals right now.
Right. Agreed. But how come that's not the story we're hearing? Because all we're hearing is ICU units are overflowing, hospitals are overflowing, there's no more room. I mean, it creates this unnecessary hysteria, which is, you know, I think it's going to come back, and it's going to haunt, and it's going to haunt the left, I think, more than it's going to haunt the right, because I think people are getting, you know, really, 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 really pent up and anxious about it.
But
for
I wouldn't call CNBC the left. They're as bad as anybody else.
Well, I think that, you know, I will say, I think they try. There are some, like you said, I think Sarah's weight, I think, because I think Sarah does go left when it comes to that, right? She's very concerned, and you can see it, you can hear it. And that's fine, because that's okay to have an opinion like that, but balance it out with the other side. And you know, even this guy, Scott Lieb, the doctor they have on TV, if you've listened to him of late, his tone has changed. Is he still concerned? Yes, but he's much more positive today than he was a month ago, for sure, because we've made headway. Therapeutics, vaccines, movement, trials.
When are we going to...
Actually, I enjoy listening to him because I think that he's got much more of an optimistic view than what was around 2 or 3 months ago.
Kenny, when are we going to have somebody that has the stones to get on there, other than you and me on this show, that will get on there and say, hey, you morons, as of today, we figure there's 40 to 50 million people that have already had this thing. What are we going to do about them? We're going to keep them in the house? We're going to keep them with masks? I've yet to hear that statistic. I mentioned last week somebody, I hope maybe it was you, being nasty, somebody sent me this coronavirus thing where it's all these doctors and everybody on there. So all I do is read the thing, Kenny. Now I'm addicted because I'm trying to memorize the proteins on the RNA thing, on the virus. I'll tell you what, to be one of those people, my hat's off to them, because they know so much stuff. How you can pick apart those things, I have no idea, but they can. And there's a lady on there, and she's in her 30s. She went back, and I don't even know if she's a doctor, she went back and reviewed all the, or as many as she can get, doctor visit records that you can find from, like, Thanksgiving to, say, the middle of February. And she's convinced that 7 million people had it before we even know it was here. She goes, there's all kinds of visits to the doctor, unknown respiratory problem, unknown virus, blah, 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 that they knew wasn't the flu of this season. She's convinced that we had a head start of 7 million people that had it before we even know the thing was here.
Listen, I wouldn't be surprised. Like I said the other day, why don't we just assume everybody's been exposed to it? Okay, now what do we do? Everybody's been exposed. A lot of people have recovered. So stop the hysteria, right? People are going to be exposed to it the same way they're exposed to the flu, the same way they're exposed to, you know, other viruses. But we've made really good headway in terms of treating this virus. That's all I'm trying to say is let's be honest about it, right?
Kenny, we are down to, I don't know if you looked at the numbers this weekend. Illinois, and this counts the few new areas like Peoria and some places, you have a little flare up, right? The amount of positive tests are 3.5%. We're talking about a test that has as much as a 2.5 to 5% false positive. You know what the amount of positive results were in New York? The percentage?
What?
1.1%. And it was 50,000 people got tested in New York, and 500 of them came up positive. What possesses 49,000 people that feel fine to go get a test?
I think it's hysteria. They're creating this hysteria that people feel like they have to go out and get it. Have to go out and get it. You know, which I guess is okay. You want to go out and get it to see whether or not you got it or you didn't have it. You had it, whatever. I mean, I don't necessarily have a problem with that. But if you feel fine and you're not and you don't not having an issue and you haven't had an issue, I wouldn't worry about it. But you know,
I'm
one person, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to agree with you. I'm going to say that if you're in New York and you didn't leave. And you're in Chicago that's been doing whatever's allowed, and I came to work every day. I mean, I drove, so it wasn't like I was on a train car. And I only drive, it's like a 2-minute drive. But I'm going to say there's no way that I haven't been exposed to it. mean, anybody left in Chicago that's working, all my, the guys.
Agreed.
The guys are in a building, especially the Hispanic people, they never stop working. They never stop working. How are they going to stop working?
Right.
They're all cooks. They're carpenters. They're something. They never stop working.
Right.
The amount of people that had it in that neighborhood, in those neighborhoods during March and April, I'll bet it was 50-60% of the people, the families had it in there. Nobody counted them. Nobody tested them. To be perfectly honest, Kenny, nobody gave a bleep, which is unfortunate. I mean, it's really unfortunate.
Right.
And you know what? I was just talking to Brendan earlier. This has become a class thing. I don't want anybody out where they can infect me, but the Amazon guy better show up. And, oh, by the way, if I order a sandwich, it better show up at my door. Who do they think is doing that?
How true is that?
Yeah,
that's actually true. You know, just because I'm calling DoorDash, I go, look, okay, I'm safe because I called Instacart, so they deliver the shopping to my front door.
Yeah.
Okay, but what about all the people in between that went shopping, packed the bags, and actually drove it to my house?
Brendan asked earlier, how come all the necessary jobs are making minimum wage? Right?
Well, but that's true. That is an argument, right? People have asked that question because you're right. All these necessary people are still out there working.
Yeah, you know, the guys are still driving the bus. The guys are still delivering the mail. We don't care about them, do we? I mean, I do. I mean, but, you know, you look around, you open your eyes, it's amazing what you might see. Just saying. But you sound good. So a guy who already had it. By the way, where the hell's my plasma?
So listen, so here's the deal. So I went on last Thursday. They had the blood. They had the truck outside collecting blood. So I went and I gave blood, and I said to them again down at in the trailer. I go, look, I've had it. I was tested positive. They said, listen, we're going to test it. We test it anyway now, whoever gives blood. He goes, and if your test comes back positive, we're going to call you to come give plasma. I said, okay, because I've been waiting to give it, but I can't seem to get an appointment. In fact, my results came back from my one blood. Yes, I'm positive. Yes, I called them yesterday. They said, oh, the list is long. We're going to call you. Okay, so now I have to wait for somebody to call me to make an appointment to go give plasma, which I'm happy to do.
Well, how much is this going to cost me?
Well, cost you any. I'll get a little bit extra. I'll send it to you.
It is interesting because I would say that if you have any older aunts or grandmothers or something, I'd get it to them as fast as I could.
Yeah, well, you know, the only ones that are left in my family are my parents. They're the oldest, right? So they're in their 80s. But yeah, you know, we'll see.
Well, hey, buddy, I'm glad to see you sound 100%. Hang in there, and let's make a few bucks today, huh? This week,
right,
we got some earnings stuff.
Have a good day.
Hey, wait, before you go, Apple, which way?
I think Apple, you mean after their earnings? I think the stock was higher.
Higher? All right, good for you, bud. We'll hold you to that next week. S&P Futures down 13, NASDAQ Futures down 63. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But if you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty and the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes, have you been frustrated by the lack of income your investments have provided? If you have answered yes to either of these questions, then we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. So please give me a call at 602-298-1278, 602-298-1278. 298-1278 so that I can explain further the benefits that PTI can offer you and your portfolio.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Lone Hope Stocks and Jocks, I'm Tom Allen. She's AV on the board, SP Futures. Well, she's AV all the time, but she happens to be on the board today. SP Futures down 1250. NASDAQ Futures down 52. Individual stocks moving, or two of them to the downside. We've got McDonald's down 419 on their earnings. We have 3M down 471. So we got all kinds of earnings the rest of this week. We got, like, as Kenny just mentioned, we got like 57 tonight and tomorrow morning and a whole bunch more on Thursday. Jeff, how are you, bud?
I'm good, Chief. How are you?
I'm doing fine for an old guy. You know what they say. Do the best you can, you know. And what did Walter Brennan used to say? I get up every morning, I check the bits for my name, and if I don't see it, I go to work.
There you go. Just, welcome to work.
So how are things by you? The magazine doing well? I hope people are reading stuff like that at home instead of just watching the news.
Yeah. No, it's one of the unanticipated consequences of the pandemic is that media is being consumed more and in different formats. So not just the obvious Netflix, beneficiary, but online media, of course, which you know, a magazine today is no longer just about print. So it's about the pacing and the content and the manner in which you aggregate content and the stories that you tell. So the fact that we're a magazine in print doesn't preclude the fact that our larger audience is a digital magazine reader. The full magazine experience now exists digitally, you know, with flip pages and embedded video and embedded websites, and it's actually a more interactive experience than the traditional print magazine. But, you know, people love that traditional print magazine. You know, books are selling very well right now, as you may have known. They're selling better now than they were, you know, pre-pandemic. And the same is going with magazines. You know, people buying physical magazines online at a higher rate than they were buying them through newsstand right now. So,
remember the Star Trek episode where Kirk was on trial for supposedly killing this guy? And he's being defended by this old crotchety attorney, and Spock says to him, "What are you doing with those things?" And he goes, "Those are law books." And Spock says, "I know, but everything is on the computer." He goes, I don't care. These are books. Law is in books. I read the books. It's different. I don't know if it's different, but just saying, you know. If I'm reading something, I want a book.
It's an interesting thing. There's been a lot that's been demonstrated academically, no longer anecdotally, that comprehension is greatly enhanced when people read something physical as opposed to online. That's been shown repeatedly among students, particularly at the college level, that if you're reading from a textbook to reading from a book, your actual comprehension of that same material is twice as great than if you're reading that same information digitally through an online reader. So there's a lot to be said for holding some print in your hand.
Well, it's not just me being, I get Tribune online every day, right? Because obviously I couldn't even get to my house before I left. So, but on Sunday I get it delivered. And when I read it, the paper versus reading it online, if I'm at Audrey's or someplace, I'll read it online. It seems like I always read an awful lot more of the paper when I page through it than when I do it online. I don't know why. I have no idea why that is. Yeah,
that's true. Well, because it's the contextual nature of the placement of stories that's an art in itself. When you lay out, particularly on a newspaper page, where you have the opportunity of having anywhere from 4 to 10 pieces of content on one page, that's an art. Is that placement which encourages people to consume more content. And it's true, in the digital world, we are more or less, headline junkies, and the notion of clickbait, which has become an art and a science, is one that's just purely intended. And we're good at that. You know, we can create headlines that suck in a reader. The problem is invariably you don't necessarily get the completion rate that you're looking for if your headline is intended to be clickbait and draw in a reader as opposed to, provide context as to what they should be reading and why.
Well, when I,
but going back to what you mentioned about the newspaper, that's also been shown that more ancillary stories and adjacent stories are consumed in a print format than they are in a digital format, because we're typically just surfing headlines.
Well, as you probably can imagine, I'm watching the Bloomberg.
Yeah, surfing headlines and rewarding your confirmation bias, only reading the stories that confirm your attitude or interest. So there is much, much less discovery in a digital media environment than there is in a printed one. If you're sitting with a magazine, you'll glance at everything on the page before you turn it. In the digital environment, you're less likely to even find yourself on an article that may not be something you would consume. So it makes us dumber. Well, I think is the bottom line.
You said this much more eloquently than I did. I just know I read an awful lot more. I'm looking at the paper that I. But it is. Some people. I mean, it's almost at a point where I can recognize who they are. Especially, I have my website open to CNBC and Bloomberg and that stuff all day. Obviously, it's amazing how many headlines grab me, and I read the story, and there's nothing in the story that has anything to do with the headline. I mean, there's no conclusion.
It's an art. It's an art that, about 10 years ago, some 20-somethings over at a news site called Upworthy really developed. And then from Upworthy, it spread to the likes of Gawker and BuzzFeed. And it was so successful developing the notion of clickbait headlines that the mainstream media had to adapt some of those principles, which is to, create headlines that suck people in. And you've seen them, the headline, "You Won't Believe What Dr. Fauci Just Said," or "Here's 7 Reasons Why President Trump Won't Get Elected." Those headlines are designed to pull you into the content. And very often they're because they're so effective to suck you in, they're very deceptive as to whether or not the content actually has anything to do with that headline, where the goal is to get you to click on that digital content. So that's become a real art, the art of clickbait. And that's just one of the reasons why we're all dumber.
Well, we had a teacher at Marist brother Copper. I had him for history and for English, of all things. And he was from New York. You know, he loved that. He would tell people about stickball, and of course, nobody here knew what the hell stickball was. The interesting part about the newspapers is if when you got it delivered at home, the Tribune totally, kicked butt on the Sun-Times, right? This is back when they were both decent papers.
Yep.
But yet, when you get on the train, you always bought the Sun-Times because the yep. Tribune had tabloid. The other, what they used to call yep. that format?
Tabloid.
Well, tabloid is the Times.
Yeah, tabloid format, I think.
But the Tribune was what? There's a name for that, too.
The big long, yeah, I forget.
Well, yep. Brother Copper comes in one day, and he's got the New York Times, back before they made them small, right? The thing was huge. And he starts telling you how you're supposed to fold it on the subway. And if you did it just right, it got down to it was like the size of a paperback book. And if you turn the pages just right, you could make it to the next one. And it was like two folds. It was like doing a Rubik's Cube. But if you knew what you were doing, because every New Yorker knows how to do this. Because you can have one hand on the strap holding the thing in the middle of the car, and one hand you can manipulate the paper. And he was saying that in those days, you wanted whatever the article was, the people reading it, the New York Times or whatever, virtually every cogent fact needed to be in like the first four or five paragraphs, because people wouldn't chase the thing through the newspaper because it was too hard to turn a page on the subway. And if you wanted to compete in that stuff, you had to. But it's interesting the science of this and how it's been going on for, you know, it was 60 years ago, for God's sake. Not 60, but 50.
Yeah, and, it makes sense. It's the same thing as in magazine construction on every page. And by the way, our digital magazines, we've won a couple awards. We're the most awarded new publication of 2019 and 2020, both in editorial and design award. I'm sorry, 8 editorial and design awards, but one of the key elements of magazine design is what's called entry points, and that's every page, every spread, every two pages that are open must have, you know, 5 or 6 different entry points, which are embraceable manners that allow the reader to drop into that page. Maybe it's a call-out quote or a pull quote or a graphic or a certain type of headline or an image or a picture. But these entry points are critical. They're a more sophisticated form of clickbait. They're a little bit more substantial because it's providing real value and interest and evoking what's called the curiosity gap, which is a important element in writing headlines, and that is to create enough curiosity that the reader wants to know more about what's behind it. So, yeah, absolutely. Just like anything, like any business, there's a science to executing properly and engaging your reader and keeping them interested. And, you know, something we all have to learn as part of the trade.
You know what I miss, because I don't get it delivered? Well, when we lived down south with Dr. J and my man J.D., we had his big house down on Beverly. Those were the good years. We had a lot of fun down there, Jeff, as you can imagine. Everybody had like two cars. The guy next door says, "Which one of these cars is yours?" And I go, "They're all ours." The guy goes, "Oh, yep." Man. He scuttled back. I think John had 3 of them, but a couple of them never moved, of course, but, you know, typical Dr. J. But we always got U.S. News and World, and we used to trade off between Time and Newsweek, so we always got 2 of them. And I used to really look forward to, like, there'd be all the stuff that's in the regular paper. I mean, obviously, you didn't have the news like you do today. You get the stuff that was in the regular paper, but if there was a big story, you couldn't wait to get the weekly, because if there was, like, a war or something, I mean, there was a little, instead of just getting bits and pieces of headlines, when you got your Newsweek or U.S. News and World Report, it'd be like a 20-page, very well-written assessment of what went on in the big story of that week, with maps, troop concentration, pictures. I mean, you got way more information there than you ever would have just by. And I think people are getting used to kind of getting the whole feel of what's going on in whatever particular area just by sound bites. And you just can't do it, Jeff. If there's a battle, or if there's, even now with the coronavirus, I want to see a map of Florida. I want to see where the hot spots are, where the people are, where they're moving. I mean, if I'm going to care about talking on the air about it, I want to see something that's factual. I just want to hear somebody's goofy opinion constantly all day long, even mine. And I want to, you know, you need to have something like that, I think. And I'm going to shift gears on you real quick. What do you think of the new Republican infrastructure, whatever they want to call this thing, not infrastructure, the new bailout bill? And I just want to ask you a first question, and the first one, in my opinion, and again, I'm just asking for yours. You don't please tell me I'm nuts. I really thought that everybody, whoever you were, from governors to president and down, figured that we would be sort of over this mess by late June, maybe July, worst case. And now yes. It seems like we're continuing to push this out, even though the news on the pandemic is getting better in terms of treatments and other things, plus a lot of people already had it. And yet, now we're having this big debate today, and you can see what side each is on. I mean, you've got the Republicans coming out and saying 600 hours a week is too much, which I think most people would say it's too much. Then they drop into the 70% of a worker's previous wages, which to me seems like a lot of work. But they're going to start out with 200 hours. And I mean, I've been saying for 3 weeks now it's going to be somewhere between $200 and $300. Now, the Democrats are stamping about how we're going to kill people by not giving them 600, which is more than a lot of people were making. And I'm going to say that the number is going to end up at 300, right about where you and I said, I think last week, Jeff, that's what it's going to be. And now we're going to talk about another several months where people are not going to be back at work or something. And when are we going to see the end of this thing? I'm not saying it should be today. I'm not, you know, saying, you know, make everybody go back to work, not get another unemployment check. But, God, we're getting there. An awful lot of people have already had it. You know, I mean, we're getting to the point here where, you know, we got to start thinking about opening the doors here, Jeff. I don't know. I'm not saying when or where, but there's got to be someplace. And it seems to me we got not even 50 dictators. We got several hundred dictators with mayors and stuff all going their own way. I don't see that as healthy. Do you?
No, clearly. Well, so starting with the stimulus bill, I think the $300 is likely the number. I agree with that because it gives the optics of a compromise, and that makes a little bit of sense. Whereas, you know, there was too much evidence that the $600 was precluding people returning back to work because of the overcompensation relative to their actual employed income. But what surprises me is that there has not been a similar compromise on the larger stimulus checks. It appears as though the current Republican plan will allow payments up to, as they were in the past, of I think it was an individual up to $75,000 income and a couple up to $150,000 income for a couple. I'm surprised that number's not being pulled back a bit, because just because there are people at the higher end of that range that don't share the same degree of need, obviously, at those more at risk populations, particularly, you know, incomes below $50,000, where this has been, you know, really hit everyone hard. And I'm just surprised that that number will stay inflated on the high end. I would expect that perhaps a more reasonable way, particularly if you're trying to trend away from stimulus and trying to reduce it overall and say, all right, this is a transition payment, then it makes sense for the employment benefit to go down from 600 to 300, and it probably makes sense to cut the income thresholds in half as well, recognizing that it's the people at the lower end that are more at risk and more in need. I'm a bit surprised by that, but then again, we haven't seen this bill reconcile yet. We're just seeing, you know, what the Republican bill is.
Well, you've got a
couple. But your bigger question is to, you know, how long can this keep going on? Who's that? The OJs? Who's that song?
Yeah.
The answer is it can't, and it's apparent. You know, economically, this is going to be devastating. The latest count is that as many as 35-40% of small businesses are not returning.
Oh yeah.
So we have no idea what the ripple effect of unemployment is going to look like, you know, several months out.
I think you and I have a pretty good idea, and it's not a good one.
No, it's not a good one. I think I'm quite frankly surprised at this point, because the only thing an incumbent president has a historic and material advantage when they run for re-election, and that is that they can use their White House and the resources of that White House to benefit their re-election campaign. And it's just another indication of what a, I guess some might say principled, but I would say stubborn and short-sighted man the president is, because quite frankly, if you're in this position and you're failing in the polls as he is so dramatically, and the one thing you had going for yourself was the economy that you really owned until the pandemic hit, I wouldn't care what the size of those stimulus payments were, because it's the only tool you have left to try to narrow the gap right now. I'm surprised that he'd be haggling over $600 versus $300 at this point. Why would he even give Democrats that argument? As it stands right now, he doesn't stand a chance in November. And the only thing he can and should be doing from a political standpoint, not necessarily in the country's best interest, but when do those two words ever reconcile ever, is he should be spending money to buy votes. And it surprises me that he is so narcissistic and stubborn that he doesn't even see that as a path to reelection.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm going to respond on that on a couple of different levels, Jeff, because it's a pretty interesting comment. I mean, at some point, you can't. We all know that if it's 2 months before your election, and you send everybody some big checks, or what they used to say, a chicken in every pot, right?
Yep.
You're going to get some votes. Yet, anybody who has an ounce of brains also knows you can't just do one thing, right? If you send somebody a $20,000 check where you just, by the way, what you just mentioned, if you do the math here, if you are a couple making 150 grand a year with four kids, you're going to get a check for $4,400. That's a lot of money. You know, and for a family, it's not even really hurting, probably. And I mean, it's a lot. But you know that it's going to be A, inflationary, and B, people are going to get used to it. And, you know, you wonder, you know, what have you sown? I mean, there's people that if you mention to them, well, where's this money really coming from? They'll say, like, from the rich, or some really stupid comment that you get from people, because not stupid, but it's uninformed, shall we put it that way. And you're right. It should be at some point. I mean, if you were doing this just to get elected, if a Democrat said six, you should say seven. I mean, right? I mean, come on.
Right.
We both know that. But we also know at some point you can't, you're there to govern too. I mean, and there's some lack. I mean, I don't know where that all ends. You know, we've seen governments do that before, and we've seen people compete that way. But there's supposed to be a Federal Reserve that says, well, if you want to go out and, but we've lost every single check and balance, Jeff, in my mind. I mean,
but 4 months to reelection is not the time for the Republicans to become spending hawks for the first time.
I'm with you, but I'm saying, but now we're into this motif now. That I mean, I see the economic lack of discipline, not just in what they're doing, but it's taken over the language. I mean, I listen to people I think that have economics degrees, some of them on CNBC, and they keep talking about fiscal stimulus. Jeff, this doesn't have a touch of fiscal stimulus. Fiscal stimulus means you go out and borrow the money from the population and spend it a different way. And if people are saving 10% and you go and you borrow the money and you spend it today, you pick up 10% because you're not gonna save anything as a government. That's all you pick up in fiscal stimulus. But what they're doing, they're saying we're going to come up with $1 trillion. The second they sell $1 trillion worth of bonds, the Fed's going to jump in and buy them, which means, other than doing the two-step out on the dance floor, they just printed the money and sent it. But that's exactly what the Fed's there to not let happen. Because if you and I were writing a constitution and we said, we're going to elect AV or anybody as president, the president gets the right to print money and spend it. Not one person in this country would sign that constitution. Say, that's nuts. Even Caesar couldn't do that, for God's sake. And that's all we're doing. And yet you will not hear anybody say in any news media what I just said in those kind of words. Why?
No, in fact, you hear the opposite now.
Yes.
You hear modern monetary theory being promoted by Stephanie Kelton and Bernie Sanders' economic advisor, who then, as a result of a unity campaign, has now joined Joe Biden's economic task force as part of this blending of the Sanders followers with Biden's followers. And now Stephanie Kelton is a voice a council voice for Joe Biden. So so to your point, what you're hearing is the opposite, is that you can print and spend money without regard.
Well, I've said this 100 times, but it deserves it again, Jeff. In my lifetime, since I was the guy at Pullman that did all the inflation stuff and watched that whole thing unfold, we never had more than a 12.5% raise in the money supply in any one of those years. And look at the damage we caused. This year, you know what the number's going to be? Take a guess.
6.
36. We're gonna increase the money supply by a third.
Oh, the money supply number. Oh, I thought you were talking about inflation
rate
or something.
We're gonna increase it by a third this year. So what is that gonna do?
Yeah, no, the money supplies have been over the thirties. Yeah, yeah, the number's high.
Now we've cut back on the velocity because we're pouring out there so fast, people almost can't spend it that fast, and it's being dropped back at the Fed overnight. And some of it, I think, almost needs to be there because. This subject I'm running into, especially after the break. What exactly are the risks of all these places? I just started listening earlier. One of my, I call them Cub reporters, they're not, obviously terrific guys, sent me the thing yesterday. One car in the Ravinia lot, 12 cars at Highland Park. There's no, this infrastructure, what is the budget of the MTA? $1 billion a year? I mean, what are we doing here, Jeff? Like, people that take the L downtown starting to get a little bit better. They said the L is pretty full. Everybody gets off of the hospitals. Nobody comes downtown. I mean, this is an infrastructure that is the jealousy of 99% of the people in the world. New York, Chicago, Philadelphia, Boston. The fact that you can get people to work for next to nothing, really. And we're going to throw it all away. I mean, what are we doing? I mean, that is such an advantage. And, but when all of a sudden these people, where is this buck going to stop? I mean, are we 4 months away from bailing out landlords? Are we going to tell people they have to pay their rent? God help, are we going to tell people they don't have to pay their taxes and we're going to print even more money? I mean, how the hell?
Well, that's essentially what we're doing when we're issuing checks from the Treasury is, these are tax refunds prior to filings. So a tax moratorium wouldn't surprise me.
Well, but you're not going to get it out of the city or the state.
No, of course not.
How are these buildings downtown going to write their million-dollar check?
Real estate has its unique troubles. I mean, look at Google's announcement yesterday that they, unlike what Facebook said, which is, you know, we're not going to call employees back till the end of this year. Google said, we don't want employees back until next summer. So that's a year. Google said a year. Now, during that year, they're going to start looking at ways to reduce their floor print. Obviously, they have leases, and Google can afford to pay them, unlike most of the other companies. But then they're going to realize, okay, well, we're working with only 10%
Jeff,
people
hold
in
that,
our offices.
Hold that thought
we can certainly get by with 50% less space. So they're going to start looking for less, to bail out on the real estate contracts that they currently have, right?
Well, Jeff,
then they're
going to
say, well, we might as well convert these people out of office from employees to independent contractors because we're going to save 23% on withholding and FICA and benefits, etc. So they're going to save money on real estate. They're going to save money on employment expenses. And that will start a new spiral that is just going to totally crush, commercial real estate, particularly on the office side. We've already seen the retail side, be decimated. But the office commercial realty is really in big trouble.
S&P futures down 11, NASDAQ futures down 47. Let's talk about that when we come back, Jeff, because you're over by where Google is, aren't you? Be able to give us an even better view of that.
Yeah,
be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. She's AV on the board. Mr. Jeff Joseph is on the air with us. S&P futures down 11. NASDAQ futures down 47. We're down more. Individual stocks moving. We got 3M down 444, 158.80. They had earnings. And McDonald's is down 463. They had earnings as well, 196.62. We have the Dow futures are down 130. And, again, we have to fight with the different stimulus packages going on this morning, which will continue, I imagine, for a week or two before they pass something. DAX down 46.4%. FTSE down 1. Call that flat. CAC and RON down 36.7. So they're pretty quiet over in Europe. Well, actually, pretty quiet here. Asia down 58. Nikkei down 58.3%. Shanghai up 22.7%. Hang Seng up 169.7%. Bonds, 0.60. We've been right here, 0.57 to 0.62, really, for a long time. Bund, minus 0.50. That's the first time it's been there for a while. It's been 0.49, 0.48. Japan, positive 0.02. We've got oil down 16 cents. Quiet day in the oil market, 41.44. Brent up 12 cents, 43.53. Natural gas up 3 cents at 177. RBOB pretty much holding steady at 127. Gold, which is going on a tear, is actually down $4 today, 19.26. I think that's probably just a little bit of a pause because they, the dollar had been going down and the dollar had stopped today too. So those two things go hand in hand. Silver down 66 cents, 23.84. Copper unchanged at 289. AB, what do you guys for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Don't forget the sports this time. Give us the big sports report.
Good morning, friends. It's 71 degrees, sunny Tuesday morning. A few showers and thunderstorms are possible this afternoon and evening. Mainly in north side, expect more areas to remain dry with the highs in the mid-80s. And 90 degrees in Phoenix, there is excessive heat warning, so if you're from Phoenix, be careful and stay out of the sun. Traffic is mainly clear. Some slight delays may appear on Adams West from South LaSalle Street up to Roosevelt and Stevenson Expressway north around South Central Avenue and Pulaskin. Somehow there is a semi-stuck under the viaduct on 67th Street at Low Avenue. Back to you.
So would you say, I think the reason why the semi is stuck under the viaduct is because the viaduct said 13.6 and the truck is 13.7. Just saying. It's probably the reason why.
Probably.
Jeff, would it be fair to say that the one person in the world that's not happy sports is back is AV?
That may not be fair, no.
I still have sports in my life.
Yeah, she's known as sports. She watches Ukrainian soccer or something. That's her idea of sports. Anyway, what do you make of the Marlins and the whole mess over there, Jeff? We'll divert here for a second and we'll get back.
That's a shame. Listen, I think baseball is really going to have a rough go. You know, I don't know if you're familiar, and you should be, Chief. I think you'd really love the series Brockmire. Brockmire is an IFC series, television series, and it's featuring Hank Azaria, who wrote Brockmire initially as a Funny or Die skit or short on the Funny or Die network that Will Ferrell has. And it was so successful that they turned it into a television program called Brockmire. And it's about like a Jack Brickhouse-like character, an aging MLB announcer, pro announcer, who has all sorts of personal problems like, you know, drugs and sex addiction and alcoholic addiction. And it's a hilarious series that also features Amanda Peet as his kind of love interest in it. And it had three or four seasons, I forget. It's over now, but what you watched throughout the three seasons of Brockmire, which anybody who likes comedies should look up, especially sports, it's a crazy funny show, is the destruction of baseball. You know, by the end of the series, baseball just, the fan base had decimated completely. The rule changes that they tried to implement to save the game were not effective. And you just saw baseball collapse as the American pastime. I hate to say this, but I think we're seeing it. I think baseball is going to be a real casualty just of this era, not necessarily of coronavirus, but we've seen this. We have three or four years of data going into this. Younger generations are embracing the game less and less. We're seeing, generally speaking, we're seeing attendance at sports events go down anyways. And I think baseball is really in for a tough time. I think that's the dirty little secret here.
Well, I don't get why we got plenty of time to get back on our building stuff, but I don't see how if you look at this virus thing, all right, so you put this plan in place, and you've got these teams with 50, 60 people available to play just in case five or six guys or seven guys come down with it. And we're talking about people that aren't even sick. They're 25 years old. They're going to go sit somewhere in a nice hotel for 10 days, and they're going to come out, and they're going to be fine. But this isn't exactly a national tragedy. Pull the other 10 guys up and play. Play through it.
Right.
Well, I mean, what is the big problem here?
Particularly with baseball, this is not like basketball where there's such close contact. You know, in baseball, they're so spread out on the field. You got healthy guys
Why can't they play? That's a good point.
I mean, but just go for it. I mean, I don't the idea that one of my guys does some work in my place, and his son-in-law helps him on the weekends. Well, evidently there was a death in the family in Mexico. So he runs out to the airport at 4 in the morning, and he manages. Now, these guys are all citizens and stuff, and he manages to get on a plane only because a person didn't show up. Every seat was taken. Okay, now, we let that... I'm not saying we shouldn't. That's going on, and yet we've got Wrigley Field that holds 45,000 people, and we can't find a way to put 1,000 people in there?
Well, yeah, that's beyond me. I don't understand why these stands are empty. I watched a tennis match last night on the tennis channel that was live, a live match, and of course there were some people in the stands. They were just socially somewhat distanced properly, you know, 5-6 feet apart with masks on, and there was, you know, more people in a tennis stand watching a single tennis match than in all of a baseball field, which was... It's hard to understand why that's the case.
I mean, we have somebody, we just had, well, Kenny was on before you. I don't know if you ever met him. He's one of the nicest guys. You'd love to meet him, Jeff. Now, Kenny was in New York. He picked his daughter up at a hospital. He gets the COVID 2 months ago. He spends the 10 days. Said he had pretty good temperature a few days. He wasn't the greatest way through. He's not like he's 25 years old. He's got strong antibodies. Why the hell does he have to wear a mask? Why does he have to socially distance? Why can't he just go about his life? I mean, we have to have 40 or 50 million people like that in this country getting there. And what are we going to do? We're going to quarantine the people we know that have a problem?
That's essentially what we're doing.
I mean, I wonder, last night we stopped for these guys that are really happy to be back working for these trading companies downtown. And you talk to them, and they'll tell you about how useless they were at home and how they couldn't wait to get back. Sheen's better. People here, you get to talk about stuff with people. No kids running around. You know, the guy isn't showing up to cut the lawn. What I mean, this whole idea of being efficient at home, they're like, these people are out of their mind. I mean,
well, you know. Well, if I may, Chief, that would be the extension of the story arc that I was proceeding down. There's no question that, you know, like Google, Facebook, the likes, all the large companies are starting to see the benefits of having employees working from home. They can reduce their square footage footprint, cut rent expenses materially. They can convert a good chunk of their employees from employees to contractors, save on withholding and benefits and other expenses, and that the current conventional wisdom is that they're getting the same degree of productivity and they're getting better lifestyle scores and enjoying their lives more. I am certain that is not going to last, specifically to what you just said. It is very, if I were to make a prediction going forward with 100% confidence, I am certain what we're going to see is more and more academic studies coming out of the workplace. I've already seen one come out of Britain that suggests that there is going to be a decline in productivity, that people need to be able to socialize or at least be in an environment that is a little bit more demanding, that's more contextually supportive of working, and that there's going to be working from home fatigue. A phrase will start appearing, you know, sometime next year, and that we start to learn that productivity has not gone up, that productivity is actually going down. I know I see it right now anecdotally. People that I'm working with or that are contractors that I work with that have you know, taking their job at home and what might have been a very disciplined in the office at 7:45 is a person not showing up online now till 9:00 and disappearing more frequently. I think that's an absolute thing that we're going to see, and that will be interesting to watch that play out.
There was a guy before my time who evidently was a plant manager at Pullman, and these guys had studies, I won't go into them, manufacturing engineering studies of people working that went back to the 1800s, Jeff. They could tell you to the day, to the hour, where if you made people work 10 hours a day instead of 8, they'd say in 6 weeks and 3 days, you're going to find out you do just as much during the 10 as you used to do during the 8. If you work Saturdays, you can get away with it. If stuff just showed up on a Friday late, you can work a Saturday and do some good. Try to work every Saturday, same thing. But they said one of the most successful plant managers they ever had was a guy that didn't want anybody doing overtime, didn't want anybody doing Saturdays, and he would show up on a Saturday once in a while just to see if anybody was there. Because he was one of these guys that the only way you have a life is if things are balanced. You go to work, you work hard, you go home, take care of your family, you play softball, you go bass fishing, whatever the hell you do, take care of the wife, go on vacation, you're supposed to take your vacation. And he really believed, they said he used to get more productivity than any other guy in history of the place. But on Saturday, he would show up, and if you were sitting there, he'd walk in and say, Jeff, how are you? I see you're here on a Saturday. Yeah, you know, Mr. Whatever. He'd say, well, there's only two reasons why you're here. One is you don't know what you're doing, or two, you don't have enough help. Which is it? I mean, how blunt was that? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, because his point was you're here to work. If you work for 8 hours, my mother had the same view of education. She went to Englewood High School. When people, the parents never helped with the homework. The parents didn't, half of them didn't speak English probably. She said, a teacher has you for 6 hours. That's plenty of time for an 8 or 9 or 10 year old. Do the homework in class, correct it right there. Don't expect anything. When you go home, kids are going to help out in the store or helping the old man doing whatever he's doing. Don't expect anything. And she goes, you learn just as much as people are learning today.
Well, let me extrapolate then that story and that experience. If he was indeed effective at being a guru to maximize productivity, I think that would be another example of if the key word there is balance, then the balance is not being achieved when people are working exclusively from home.
Well, it's individual. I mean, like I say, my significant other, she has her own, she lives at home, and she has an office, and she has her real estate office is there. So there's no real reason for her to drive 20 miles one way to plant her behind in the office so the boss can see her, only to get up and go show a house the other way from her place. Right? But I don't think it would be efficient for her to have three associate producers in her living room, you know, right? So I mean,
right.
It does work for anybody who's ever, I don't know if you knew guys, I knew two or three people that I went to school with, their dads, one Gene and one other guy, Bill, their dads were guys that were, what they used to call the guys, like the traveling sports salesmen, before there was internet, that would go to every high school and they would order your shoulder pads and your jack straps and everything from all these guys, basketball, and they would get the order and they would deliver the stuff. And, you know, these guys went from school to school and sold stuff, right? But I mean, those guys were on the road every day. They only made money if they sold something. They didn't have to go sit somewhere for a while with a boss. They were, the free agents always have worked from home, right? But you never had to worry about those guys. What you're saying, I think more interesting thing, everything you said was interesting, is the fact that Google's gonna try and use this as an excuse, which the government, by the way, has been pushing back on really hard for a number of years. I mean, talk to Lou about that. They're trying to make these guys 1099 employees instead of real employees. And I think there's going to be some pushback on that. Because what's the definition that Lou says? If you can tell somebody, if they have to be someplace at a certain time, and you can tell them what to do, then they're an employee. You can't get away with it.
Yeah, control is the main criteria.
But
people are more task oriented in their engagements. You know, your job is to do this, and it's not about when you do it; it's just that you complete it. You know, it's more conducive to offsetting that control requirement of an employment.
Well, you've got me very curious now. What Google does, you know, their system obviously needs, you know, buku maintenance. And they're probably always doing new stuff. Do they have a lot of free agents to come in and say, okay, here's your job. We think it's 1,000 hours. Knock it off. Where there'll be one, you know, one piece of the page this guy works on. So there's another ad. I mean, I'm all ears on this because I don't know. How does that work? Do they have people that they actually do this little piece and that's all they do and they go somewhere else and do something for somebody else? I mean, I imagine a lot of that's going on.
They have both. Obviously, the consultant community has grown materially, particularly in tech, where there are people that might be, you know, just external developers or contracted just for a technical function. But the overwhelming majority of the engagements that Google and Facebook have are on an employee basis.
I had a long time ago, I used to like, well, I haven't done it in a while, I used to like go around the country and I'd buy old trucks, right, just for laughs. Just because everybody was mad at me when I did it, so I had to go do it just to show them, right? So I get out of Miami and I buy this Toyota T100. Beautiful shape. So I'm talking to this guy. And he says, well, you know, I'm from Cuba. I said, that's fine. I don't care. I fly down there. The guy shows up at the airport. We go to breakfast. Turns out the guy had researched me a little bit and was listening to the show every day. So he goes, well, you can't drive back to Chicago without my wife meeting you. And I go, your wife? He goes, she listens every morning. She's dying to meet you. If I let you get out of town, she's going to kill me. So all of a sudden, I'm looking at this guy, and I don't really look at guys, and I'm saying, this guy is not a normal-looking dude. Then he starts, I says, so what do you do for a living? He says, well, I'm a contract, you know, IT guy. He says, I used to work for these companies. He goes, now you never work for anybody. He goes, I got a year-long job now at Exxon down here. I'm doing a redo of part of their system, and then it'll be done in a year. I'm right on schedule, and I'll go somewhere else. He goes, I don't think I'll ever be an employee again. And I said, okay, well, what else do you do? You don't look like totally normal. He goes, oh, I'm a seventh-degree black belt in like four different disciplines. I go, I just look at this guy going, he doesn't look like a normal guy. He didn't. Boy, talk about a dude you would not mess with. So his wife comes over, and he says, he goes, no, let me help you. If your car, if this thing conks out in Tennessee, don't call your wife, don't call your brother. I'll come get you. That's how much I know this car is going to make it back to Chicago without any problem. I don't think I've ever met a guy like that before. I mean, what talk about a night. But he said, no, I'll never be an employee again, probably. Every job, 6 months, a year, and I go in and I do my thing, and I bring it to a close. Everybody's happy, and I go on to the next one. I mean, is that increasing, you think, or decreasing, staying the same?
It's increased materially, and one of the best proxies for that right now is a public company called Fiverr, which is the ticker FVRR. We know Zoom and Teladoc were obvious beneficiaries of COVID, but there are stocks like Fiverr that represent this the freelancer community. And this stock has just done extraordinarily well because its global community of freelancers has just grown exponentially during this period. And it's the eBay for freelancers, basically. So if you're looking for someone to do graphics for you, or do proofreading, or copywriting, or web development, or SEO search, or whatever it might be, you hire somebody on a contract basis through this platform, and the platform makes its fees. It's called Fiverr. Initially, it was on the idea that you could hire people for $5 to do anything, but of course, that site's seen it. Some inflation in its pricing.
It's like the
dollar
store.
Very, very successful company, and its community, its global community of freelancers is just continues to explode. I was on a conference call that they did with their global community, and apparently there was, you know, like 700,000 people on this call, and they're just, That's the future. Is obviously a lot of them are people that were recently laid off, and other people that were recently converted from employees to contractors. So you'll see a lot more of that, and that's a stock to watch as a proxy for that.
Jeff, who gets the? I don't know. I always dig into the detail, but who gets the job? If you're a guy going through Fiverr or someplace, and this job comes out, and you get it, is a contract with Fiverr or with Jeff Joseph?
Think of it simply like an eBay or an Amazon. If you hire me to do graphic design for you, first of all, it's not an RFP process. It's not like you're saying, I'm looking for graphic design on a project like this, and you submit it, and then 10 bids come, and you take the best bid. No, instead, you're looking through the individual people and looking at their qualifications, and you are making a decision as to who you want to purchase to do the job, and the money that goes through the platform, who takes off their fee, and then the rest goes to the person you've engaged through the platform.
Well, so, but if you clunk up, and all of a sudden it doesn't work, and whatever you just did for me just blew my kitchen up, who's liable? You or Fiverr?
Fiverr will disclaim anything, just like, you know, Craigslist would or anybody else.
Okay, so they're not
Tackle or, you know, any one of those third party job apps. They're not going to have responsibility for the underlying contractor.
Well, I did. I mean, everybody, you know, goes gushy over Amazon. I bought one computer from those guys like 8 years ago. I'll never buy anything from them again. The thing was no good, and when I And when I went to Apple, they said the thing's out of warranty. It was sitting on somebody's shelf for 2 years. And I called Amazon. They said, "Well, why is that our problem?" I go, "Cause I got it from you guys." They said, "Oh no, you bought it from AD's computer joint." But hey, we only got 2 minutes. We got 2 minutes. Right. How does Google? Let's just use the name. I don't know. I don't think they're weaseling out on stuff or anything. But I think our populace doesn't understand the building like we're in. Jeff, it's 12 stories. You know, it's one of the older buildings in the South Loop. Buildings like this pay like $250,000 a year in taxes. I don't think many people know that. It's not like it's, you know, $50. It's real numbers. So Google puts this place up. They've got all these people that move down there. People move to Chicago. Now, a lot of people they're talking about working from home are 2 blocks away, right? Because they built all those places where people are actually living there. So they decide everybody's at home and they got too much space. Now, their lease has got to be 10, 20 years, I would guess. Do they just walk on that? Do they try and sublet it? Do they just stop paying? I mean, I can't imagine Google doing that. And in the building, then what? They don't pay their mortgage? The tax bill, somebody's got. I mean, how does that all work through? You're not going to be able to do all that in a minute, but it seems like we're going to find out in some of these areas.
We are going to find out. This is not going to be like the surplus we saw during the tech wreck of 2000 or the Great Recession in 2008-09. You know, this is going to look like a rounding error compared to that. This is going to be much more like the early 1990s when we had the savings and loan crisis and, you know, overdevelopment of office buildings and foreclosures. We're going to see a lot of vacant spaces and a lot of rents not going to be paid. I mean, that's what lies ahead.
I don't know if you listened to the show at all yesterday. We only got 30 seconds, but John Flanagan was giving us nobody knows this stuff more than John. He's giving me a history lesson of the incredible building boom in the city before the 29 crash, and how virtually every one of those buildings changed hands a couple times during the Depression. And I mean, it was way. I mean, he goes, if you want to write the history of it, you got to start there. I didn't know anything about that, but John is really good. Hey, Jeff, as usual, it's terrific, buddy. You have a great week. Weather's supposed to be nice, kind of like this brutal weekend.
We'll see you next week.
Yep, see you next week. SP futures down 850. NASDAQ futures down 33. We've come back here a little bit. Again, movers are 3M down 450. McDonald's down, rarely down $3 now, so it's coming back. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.